Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Black History Always. Black History Always is a new podcast in partnership with The Undefeated that takes a deep dive into the stories of now and tomorrow from a black aperture that empower and inspire. That's Black History Always. Listen wherever you find your podcast. Also, ESPN Plus subscribers, join an ESPN Plus fantasy football league now for a chance to win $250,000. Sweepstakes is U.S. only, 18 or older. No purchase necessary. Visit ESPN.com/ESPN Plus football rules for full details and official rules. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we got another semifinal matchup of the charity trivia tournament. Howard Bryant and Joel Anderson. But first, Foxworth Friday. Dominique Foxworth, what's going on?
Nothing, live and direct from my basement prison.
Yeah, man, you was scrapping it out. Well, verbally scrapping it out, not physically scrapping it out with 8-year-old a little bit earlier.
You got to raise different kids differently. And I know that arguing with my 8-year-old son is the absolute wrong thing to do, but sometimes I can't resist it. And just the idea, like people our age who don't have kids probably listening to this and thinking, arguing with an 8-year-old, like, we don't do that. I would have agreed with you back before I had kids. But man, raising kids these days is a whole different animal. We're trying to figure it out. We're doing all right, though.
Well, I mean, the problem is, like, if this was golf, modern parenting forces you to take the driver out the bag. Ain't about to be no 300-yard strokes no more. Like, once that one's out the bag, I don't really know what you're supposed to do in some of these circumstances, because they have an appreciation for nuance, but also don't really grasp nuance at all.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about kids a bunch of times, and kids are like very primitive adults. And you know what works in primitive times? Yeah, we get this message across real quick in that way, but that ain't how we doing things. So like, it forces you, or at least me, to be like strategic. And it's so hard to be strategic, which this ties into sports in some way. It's so hard to be strategic when your emotions are high. When your kids say something disrespectful, and which maybe not all kids do, but some kids will. And as much as any parent who's out there understands this, any non-parent is like, I would never allow that. They do it one time, I get them right in line. If you're not using your fisticuffs, all you can do is use words. And then sometimes they say this stuff and you're like, all right, so how to react to this? You want to blow up and you want to be bigger than them and you want to yell and be intimidating. But what is that doing other than reinforcing the stuff that you don't want? Because like, that's something I noticed my kids, the little like sarcastic ass that I say to them when they doing stuff like that, my parents would say, you know, like, I ain't one of your little friends, like that type of stuff. I then hear my son saying that to his little sister. And it just, even though that's not the worst thing in the world, I recognize that most of the things they're doing, they're learning from me. So then I'm in these situations where I'm infuriated, I might blow up. And then when he get mad, he blows up. And I'm like, what you doing? How you gonna talk to me like that? I was like, oh, because that's what I did.
You can't establish the hierarchy, though. Like, yeah, like that was another weapon of old school parenting that seems to have gone away, which is, but I just saw you do it. And
yeah, that's been used multiple times, like screens off. But daddy about to watch this TV show. And they come in there and like, and that's one where I don't get any pushback. For some reason, they understand that this house is mine and all this stuff. And they don't push back on that one. They used to. They'd be like, but you said screens off for you. Just like what I say is bedtime. It's bedtime for you. Like, we don't get any pushback there. With my son, we mostly get pushback on like school stuff where he's like, I'm like, all right, let's get ready for this. This school year starting, I need you to write these sentences, and he'll write some sentences or whatever. And like this morning, the beef was about a couple of his sentences weren't complete sentences. They had a subject, but they didn't tell us anything about the subject. They didn't tell us what the subject was doing. And I was like, this is not a complete sentence. He's like, yeah, it is. There's a period. I was like, no, man, like, you know what a complete sentence is. I find myself having a debate. My wife was an English teacher and an English major. I write occasionally for a living. And we're in there like, let me explain to you what a sentence is. And he knows, but he's just the type of kid that he don't got no back down in him. So he's like, all right, well, we're going to spend 2 hours. And I'm like, you can have your iPad. You can do whatever you want. Just go ahead and knock these sentences out. This is a sentence. And then we're in there talking about whether it's a sentence or not. Eventually, I just walked away. Like, all right, well, your choice.
Dude, I just don't know what I would do with the child with no back down. Right? Because like part of this requires I occasionally make you back down. That's the game. That's what we're playing. I occasionally make you back down. Some of them just ain't built like that at all.
Yeah, so my son is not built like that. He don't got no back down, but the best thing that I've learned, and maybe other parents out there understand this, is like he thrives on that confrontation. So like, we're not gonna have this. Like I say straight what I want and what I expect, and then I walk away. And he wants the things that he wants. I'm like, oh no, remember we discussed this? Like, you're not gonna get that iPad, or you're not gonna get whatever until you get it done. And then he tried to start arguing and formulating his defense. And like, yeah, I'm not gonna listen to it. That's the best I got.
I use the comparison to the driver. It's not really the driver, it's the putter. Like, we try to get off this hole. You know what I'm saying? We need to wrap this up right fast.
The word driver just feels more appropriate though.
Yes, it does. That idea of cocking that thing back and bringing it through.
Oh my goodness. That's the thing. Like, one of my friends who was about to have kids asked me, like, what's it like to have kids? And I feel like kids to me feel like drugs, and that all the sensations that you had before in life are just enhanced. Like, I've never been more scared than when I thought something was wrong with my kids. I've never been more happy than when like my kids do something benign and just catch me off guard. I remember like being near tears because I was like way back before the pandemic, I'm driving my kids to school and my oldest daughter at the time was probably like 7 years old. She's in the backseat singing some terrible pop song and just smiling, and I'm driving her to school. And I was like, I didn't imagine like this would make me happy just driving, you know? And like, I've never been more angry than when my son says something disrespectful to his mother. Like, that's the thing about kids. They just enhance everything, all the good and all the bad.
Yeah, that disrespect for the mother. I do feel like even with this new age of parenting, there is still that countdown to the clock of, depending upon how you feel about the situation, just when you are officially old enough, not necessarily for a beat down, but perhaps an snatch up.
Oh, yeah. Snatch ups happen. They're never planned. But if you get your arm grabbed and get a tight squeeze, that'll happen. But then they like, my body is my body. I've been told that before. Like, that's what they're teaching in these schools, which I respect and I appreciate it. And I don't want to like discourage that, because you can't just let anybody grab you up or touch you in any old kind of way. But it's also like, now it's time to move on. There's safety and there's respect. So you're going to get that little bicep grab.
Yo, speaking of respect, I'm actually a little surprised, and maybe I missed it. I haven't seen that many people talk about it on the internet. But we checked out that interview that Draymond Green did with Kevin Durant. And first of all, Draymond about to take one of our jobs. I don't know whose job it's going to be, but he's going to take one of our jobs. He did a really good job with that interview. Now, granted, it's a little different when you interview with somebody you know, but still.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with you. I didn't know if we were going to talk about how Draymond did specifically, but I wrote that down. It had me questioning, like, what was it that made it such a good interview? And I think it's just like rapport and confidence. There's a rapport. And when you're already a celebrity, like it's one of those things, like a stand-up comedian selling out arenas. When you get up there, you say something that's mediocre, people start laughing because they have a certain amount of respect for you that you don't have when you're just starting out. And like, he has a relationship with Kevin Durant and everybody, frankly, we all know who he is. So I imagine that he comes with that relationship, and he also has the expectations of realness, you know, like if you think about old Howard Stern interviews, is like people came on Howard Stern and they had the expectation, because he had already set this precedent, like they had the expectation he gonna ask me something wild and I gotta answer it. And that, like, all that came together, and Draymond then followed it with a bunch of great questions. It's the best interview I've seen of Kevin Durant, for sure.
Yeah, like the questions were also direct. Like, that's the one thing about it that I think, when you're dealing with somebody that you already know, you can ask those direct questions because you know that person isn't trying to play you, right? Like that feeling of when it gets dicey, you're like, yo, I feel like you're trying to play me right now, right? He knows the dude. Now, keep in mind, their relationship, as far as we know, we don't know. you know, in the game where Draymond went off and that, you know, made the team real shaky. If you haven't gotten a chance, I think the show's called Chips with Draymond Green. And I hate the premise. The premise is entirely about where you get that chip on your shoulder from. And you know how I feel about that. But he doesn't really seem to have a chip per se. He's just like, yo, I'm excellent at this. And I want to be as excellent as possible at this thing I do. I was most interested, and they put this early, with him talking about that blow up that Draymond had and the way Durant felt about it. And they both had the same issue. Not so much with each other, but the fact that they felt like the people in charge of the situation were a bunch of suckers. Mm-hmm. Like, in the end, Kevin Durant is like, all right, so Draymond went off, call me this, be that, all this other stuff. And Durant was like, all right, you're going to need to come in front of everybody and own this. That's the only way we're going to fix this. Like, it didn't even sound like it was entirely about his feelings as much as a general understanding of how things like this get resolved. It involves someone demonstrating some measure of accountability. And then Draymond feels like he goes and talks to the bosses and they kind of trying to tell him what to do, but they also want to act like none of this ever happened. And both of them understood that there wasn't no acting like it didn't happen, but the bosses thought that we could just act like it didn't happen.
Yeah. I mean, Draymond, they have encouraged this. Like, there's some behavior that, and we started the show talking about kids, and I know people are different and some people are going to do and say and handle certain situations differently. But as an adult, you conform to some degree in order to make things work. So even if you don't lay out rules, the first time somebody does something, like, you make it clear that ain't how we do things around here. Or you're like, okay, that's fine. That's how we do things around here. They made it clear to Draymond that that's how we do things around here. They talked about, Draymond was talking about how he MF Steve Kerr. And even when Draymond was talking about how he talked to the general manager of the team, he talked to them like he talked to Kevin Durant on the court that day. So that, to me, is also my first inclination was it was unfair for them to aim this at the brass because they just got together and maybe they didn't want to go at each other on this show. But then I thought through it. It was like, actually, no, they just being honest, because it's so weird for them to let Draymond, I mean, let Draymond feels weird, but for them to stand by while Draymond is MFing the heads of the organization and his teammates, and they don't do nothing about it. And they're like, that's Draymond being Draymond. They defend Draymond. They're like, we need that. Sometimes it goes off kilter, but like, we need that energy on this team. And then this one time with this one particular person, all of a sudden, now we gonna come to you. You're like, we got to give you a suspension and you need to go straighten this out. Like, that to me was where they messed up. Like, treating that situation any differently than you would any other one, to me, is like weird.
This is a conclusion that I reached, and I felt like it was reaffirmed by the way Draymond talked about the situation. He might apologize, but not if you tell him to. Because one thing I thought that was interesting, even as it happened when he talked about it publicly, he didn't seem very willing to say, I did something wrong. Even if he was willing to say that he had to take care of it, he didn't seem too willing to say, I did something wrong. And so I do feel like that was probably a situation where the people in charge were like, yo, we just can't hope Draymond says that he didn't do what he was. Because now they on the line, right? Because Durant looking at them like, yo, what y'all about to do about this, right? Because it ain't really my job to do this. What y'all about to do? And they like, yo, we can't really like do nothing with him, right? Even Durant later in the interview, Draymond was like, of all the teammates that you had that had a tendency to go a little too far, which one was the one that really went too far? And he was like, yeah, Draymond Green. Like, I was fascinated by so much of what they talked about in that interview that got me was the matter-of-fact tone that Kevin Durant had when he talked to Draymond Green about Draymond Green.
And Draymond wasn't offended by things that I felt like I would be offended by if somebody said it. Like, Draymond kind of painted it as the way that the Warriors always painted is like, this comes with the package. Like, sometimes guys like us go a little too far, but it comes with the package. One of my favorite parts of the interview was when Draymond asked KD, like, did he regret leaving because we would have won 5 more championships? And KD was like, team I'm on now would have won this year if we stay healthy. I was like, yeah, the common denominator in this situation is Kevin Durant.
Right. He's like, and I did like the way that Draymond said it. He's just like, yo, because I've been getting my ass kicked since you left. So I got to like get down to the bottom of this. Like, it has not been sweet. Now, granted, other things have happened since Kevin Durant left. But still, right. It has not been sweet for the Warriors since Kevin Durant went on about his business.
He really wanted him to be like, yeah, I think about what we did. It was magical basketball, and I want to be back there. I wish we'd have won some more. That's why he was leading him to that direction. And he was like, nah, everywhere I go, yeah. We contenders.
He's like, I ain't thought about y'all for a second since I left. Just like I ain't thought about Oklahoma City for a second since I left.
And I believed it. Yeah, like players say stuff like that, and I don't believe it. That was another thing. I just felt like Kevin Durant feels like a really like self-aware as a superstar athlete can be, and honest and direct. Like maybe this was because Draymond was answering the questions, but KD is like straightforward on social media and stuff, and refreshing, I feel like, is the word that I want to use. I don't think most people would look at KD and think refreshing, but listening to him in that setting, talking about whether he wanted to be a dad or not, and all that stuff. And when he asked him about happiness, he gave a really interesting, mature sounding answer about happiness. Maybe it was mumbo jumbo, but to me, it doesn't matter whether it's mumbo jumbo if he sincerely believes it. And it felt like in a situation he said, like, he doesn't go around looking for happiness. He is like looking for peace and like looking for the peace and the happiness in all the events of his life, which I was like, I wish I could think like that, but I'm not a 7-footer who can shoot from half court, though. So,
yeah, but I also think important to note about Durant, and I think this is something worth keeping in mind about a lot of these guys, especially the ones that we get to know when they're 17, 18 years old, and they seem so grown at the time because their games are grown, right? Kevin Durant's, what, 32, 33 years old now at this point? When all this stuff was going on with the Warriors, that's 3 years ago or two, 3 years ago? The difference between where he was and where he is now with an Achilles tear in between and all of that, yeah, well, that's a big deal. Like, there's a lot of room to grow and become a different person. Because I know 2 years ago, the way that I felt about the way that he comports himself was totally different than the way I feel now. Now, one thing I also think I've come to understand that I didn't realize back then was apparently a bunch of y'all act like suckers with these burner accounts. Like, I had no idea how matter of fact some people would manage to be about the idea that you get mad and get on the internet and turn into an egg. And all of a sudden, like, once you, like, and I don't even understand how that makes you feel better, because I want somebody to know it was me if I'm really going to get something out of it, right? Like, otherwise, like, you saying something like that to me, you're just a random person on the internet that I ain't got to think about. But, like, for me, that was something, and maybe it's an age difference, but it was something that made me look at him with real judgment. I thought that was weak. And I don't think it's any stronger now than I used to, but apparently it's just a little more common than I understood that it was at the time. But when I hear him now, and I guess maybe part of it too, in that last year with Golden State had to be a lot of stress for him for a number of reasons. But when I hear him now, he does seem like a guy that's like, yeah, I figured it out.
Yeah.
Like, I see what's going on here.
Obviously, I've never had a burner. I never needed a burner. Like, the beginning of social media, my career was starting to end. But I guess I'm in it now. So I get plenty of hate here. And the burner idea, I think you and I are in a similar generation in that. But I guess I remember hearing you talk about Simone Biles and talking about how a lot of people make it about themselves. And in actuality, y'all not Simone Biles. You don't know what it feels like to be that. And I think that's how I started wanting to defend Kevin Durant. So to be clear, that was the bias that I came in with. And I think that's how I defended the burner, because I also agree, like, the burner thing feels somewhat weak. But the way that I justify it is, like, I ain't never been through what he been through. Like, I ain't never had that feeling like a whole sports country is turning against you and judging you and saying that you like ruined basketball and like are right. Actually very angry about it. And then you can't hide because everywhere you go, you're 7 feet tall, 170 pounds, however much he is, like he stands out. And that he never flipped out and threw anybody through a window. He never beat anybody up. He never did anything that I can remember that was anything real to get in trouble for. If hopping on an egg is how you cope, man, like some people smoke weed, some people have a drink, some people do all three along with trash talking people to egg. That was kind of what I came to. It was like, man, I don't know how to deal with this. He's figured out a way. Nobody knows how to deal with this because it's such a small community.
I encourage people to check out the interview. Like, I thought it was a really interesting look and into both of them.
Yeah.
Honestly, right? I felt like I came away from that with a different understanding of both of them. Because I think I've told you, the thing that gets me about Kevin Durant is, at least with a black player, I can't think of one that's ever been that good at basketball and less concerned with, like, being fly in any sort of way whatsoever. Being that dude, like, maybe Kareem fits that description, right? Yeah. But like even Charles Barkley was also like country player type stuff a little bit. But when you see Charles Barkley, when it's time to go somewhere or something like that, he always is right one way or another. Kevin Durant is like the only dude in the NBA who don't have his own barber, or is his own barber. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, so many of the people would say like, man, nothing more important to me than my game. Hey, Kevin Durant.
Right, tell him.
Hey, I mean, he wants to be a 99 on 2K. Somebody need to give him that 99 because it does feel like that. That was part of one of the reasons why he talked about not having a child yet or not being in like a serious relationship is like, that's going to take away from me focusing on my game. Well, you ain't got no time for nothing else that other than like social
he
media.
He about this, man.
Beef. Yeah, he and the proof is in the pudding.
Yo, it's I always feel so happy for really tall people when like the thing that does make them feel that good actually happens to be basketball. Like, that's a great coincidence for you to have. Like, I feel bad for you if the only thing that makes you feel good is being a better basketball player and you 5'7". You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't really turn that into nothing. That, like, that being your art and being your craft, ain't nobody really going to be able to respect it. But, like, when you 7 feet, I'm so glad that the thing that truly makes you feel good is playing basketball. I really, really am. Because otherwise, like, imagine if you were as good as Kevin Durant and playing basketball made you miserable.
Isn't that true of, like, some black baseball players?
Well, yeah, Tim Anderson says that. He keeps, like, oh, I think he's telling the truth. But honestly, if that is really how you feel, Tim Anderson go retire when he's 31. Because you got to play that thing every single day.
I mean, it's no different than any other normal person having a job that they hate.
Except you don't work on Fridays and Saturdays and then jump on planes and all this stuff. You so be there worse. Till midnight. I look at baseball like living in New York. You can do it. Like if you get some bread or whatever, like you got some bread in New York, you can make it work. But if you ain't got no bread, you can't like living in New York. You can't think it's pretty cool. You can't even really like it. You got to love it. Like, if you don't love it, this place is not going to work for you unless your bread is super long. And that's how I feel about baseball. Either you got to love it or have all the bread.
You're on fire with the metaphors and analogies today. The golf one and this one, you're right, because that's a perfect example. I lived in New York for a year and had enough money to be like comfortable, and I really enjoyed it. But my wife was like, nah, I hate this. Like, let's visit often, but we're not going to make this our main residence.
That's interesting, because I would think that New York would be up her alley in the little bit that I know about her.
Honestly, it's just family. Her whole family is like DC. It's like 40 of them that live inside the DC limit. So no matter where we was, it was going to be a problem.
See, that's an interesting life for me that I don't know how well I would adjust to, because like my family, we all like each other, but we spread out, you know, like we all got our own individual space to operate. That thing where you jump in and to make this thing work, you also have to join this new club.
Yeah,
I don't know about that. I almost did that once. And the thing was, that club had some managerial issues. You know what I'm saying? Like, team chemistry not up to snuff. And I'm like, oh, this is what I'm becoming a part of? No, I don't think so.
I think there's probably a number that is comfortable. If you're less than that number or above that number of like people, then you're good. Because like, it's so many of them here that nobody is too much, you know, like they all see each other, and like most of them are successful. So like, we're not like the focal point. Like, they all got some nice stuff going on and they are busy. So it works out pretty well. I mean, every now and it's really helpful when you need some help with these children, but
yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's, and I have the benefit of having established a long time ago that I don't really like people. So everybody is like, oh, you know how Dominique is. He just likes to be off to himself, so I don't have too many issues with it.
Well, that helps, because the other thing, too, is when you got that set up and everybody there, somebody always graduating, always somebody birthday, it's always somebody milestone, and I just wouldn't want to feel like seeing them people like that all the time. That's
it's
just
not
me.
Even the seeing of them that's frustrating. It's just the calendar. You're like, man, this, I was planning on doing this, planning on doing that. Like, nah, somebody just graduated from medical school. This person is going to law school. Oh, high school graduation. I'm like, we don't got to do high school graduation. So we know they're going to college. I'll show up there when they graduate from something else. Like, most of them got advanced degrees. And it's like, I'm not coming to your high school graduation when both of your parents are lawyers, because I know where you're headed next.
Well, how about this? Why can't I just go to the after party? Like the actual graduation itself, there's no reason for me to be there. And the kid ain't going to notice and kid ain't going to care. I'll show up for the barbecue.
I'm with you. But this is just another. I feel like I share in all my deepest held beliefs is that there's something about like the sacrifice that like makes it feel valuable. And I would have never thought this before, but giving up your Saturday and going to a long, boring, hot in the sun graduation, like is a sacrifice of time and effort that is like more valuable to some people than if you send them a $500 check.
And those people are their parents, by the way. The graduate doesn't care. The parents are the ones who care.
You're right. But I mean, that's what it comes down to just in general with like, and maybe this is, I hear people talk about like love languages and relationships, but I don't know that I completely understand it, but maybe this is my own love language speaking is that the sacrifice to me is what is a testament to how much you give a damn. Like you give it up something. Like if my wife buys me a gift, like thanks, I guess you thought of me, but.
Oh yeah, I know that this is an adjustment in my life. Once I got this bread, they like, yo, you can spend it. Cause bread's what I got in surplus, right? Like, yeah, I can trick off all this gift for whoever you happen to be, but then they don't feel it no more, right? Cause they feel like, well, you can easily do that. Why I gotta break my back to make you feel good? You know what I'm saying? Do you like it or not? That's why I ain't spending no big money on people. Cause I know it ain't gonna do the job. That people only care if you spend big money on the gift if you're broke.
Yeah. I mean, it means more. I'm sorry. It sounds like you're judging those people who only care.
No, I'm not judging. I'm not judging. I'm just saying here on this end, it's like, I feel where you're coming from, but damn, you feel where I'm coming from.
I'm on both ends. And it's happened a number of times where I would buy my wife like one of them fancy overpriced bags just as a surprise and give it to her. And she's like, oh, thank you. That was so thoughtful. I'm like, but this had a comma in it. And it was just like off the whim. And then I realized that she buys herself the stuff that she wants. And like for me, when she buys me something that's thoughtful, whatever, I appreciate it. But when she's like, you know what? I'm going to take the kids off your hands for the day. We going out. Don't come with us. I'd be near tears. Like that is such a, you know what I mean? Cause I'm like, that's like, that is a commitment. And you just want me to be happy. Like you don't give a damn. I remember she called me one time after she took the kids to the pool at her uncle's house and was like, how's it going? And I was like, man, just working. She was like, no, that's not why I took them out. I want you to enjoy yourself. And I was like, man, I love you. Like, you could buy me a car or a watch or whatever, and it won't feel as good as when you do stuff like that.
That's what's up. Now, speaking of near tears, your boy Joel Anderson was near tears after his first round victory in the Right Time inaugural charity trivia tournament where he defeated Mina Kimes and had a little something to say to all the naysayers. Coming up, he's about to face up with our man, Howard Bryant. So get ready for that in 3, 2.
Welcome to the Bomani Jones Right Time Charity Trivia Tournament. We are at another semifinal between two great combatants. They knocked out the minorities in the tournament. So I don't know if that makes you like them more or like them less. Either way, but one of them's got to win. I know the people don't want Joel to win because the people really hate you and your internet presence.
I'm sorry, this is South Africa now. You know what I'm saying?
All right, so we got two contestants, 5 questions apiece. They have 1 lifeline. They can turn the question into multiple choice if they so choose. The person with the most correct answers wins. Let's officially meet these contestants. First up, it's the underdog with the sharp tongue or the sharp fingers. I don't know. He's an internet gangster himself. Joel Anderson.
Internet gangster. You said I had internet muscles. First of all, I got real life muscles. And second of all, ain't nobody afraid of Mina Kimes. You know what I'm saying? I would have faced up on her, but my message wasn't directed at her.
Weren't going at her. You was going at the Nobody Believed in Us crew. Was you.
Just call me He Hate Me. You know what I'm saying?
The Mo City Don.
You don't. I mean, I guess technically you have muscles because everyone has muscles, but I mean, maybe this is a bad angle.
Don't make me. You know what I'm saying? I got a little something there. What's up with that? You know, I do a little something in the weight room. That's, and this is
not
on YouTube
impressed.
Too.
Hopefully you are playing for a charity that involves a gym somewhere, but I don't know. Let's find out.
Wow.
What charity are you playing for today?
The Southern Center for Human Rights. Good people doing great work.
Appreciate it, man. All right. And you are matched up against the man with two first names and two last names, Howard, the champ, Brian. Welcome, hey, sir.
What's up? Good morning. And yeah, you know what, though? How are you going to call Joel an underdog gangster?
I've been disrespected. That's fine, Howard. That's so fine.
That's not disrespect.
I mean,
that's
an underdog gangster kind of means you don't win that often, though, right? If you're an underdog gangster.
Nah, he wins a lot, just the people don't believe in him.
Exactly. Nobody thought we could do it.
Yeah, he's that guy.
I mean, we know what the public isn't often right about things. You know what I'm saying? General consensus isn't that great. So I'm good on my own over here. I'm rolling for Dolo.
That's right. We got brothers up here. This is like the alternate ending of Zulu Dawn, right? Everybody's here. Brothers won.
Oh, man. What a perfect reference for all of the listeners who are under 30. They are appreciating that. Get on the Google, my friends.
Yes. Look it up.
Get on the Google, my friends. So who are you playing for today, Mr. Bryant?
Making my movie references, I'm playing for the lovely nonprofit Amherst Cinema, which is the only place where you can get Black movies out here in Amherst, Massachusetts. So I did a little Summer of Soul, Do the Right Thing back to back on the big screen and was very, very, very grateful for that.
Summer of Soul is pretty great. Do the Right Thing is too, obviously. But for those who haven't seen Summer of Soul, I thoroughly enjoyed it. Did you like it?
I didn't know you had seen Do the Right Thing, Dominique. I wore a t-shirt that said Boycott Sal's and you had no idea what it was talking about.
Wow.
That, you know,
call
what?
Me out trying to embarrass me in front of the elders.
Right? You already did it to yourself in front of America.
That movie is like 30 years old.
I'm just saying, Dominique was like, Do the Right Thing is a good movie, and I simply didn't know he had seen it.
I just didn't appreciate that you wanted to boycott Sal's. I personally thought the move was to burn it down. That's, I mean, sorry that you saw.
See,
sorry, my bad. Here I am talking about peace. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, when has peace ever worked? Anybody ever gotten any change in the history of anything with peace? This podcast is going off the rails.
I took my 17-year-old to that. We walked out of the theater. I was like, "You gonna be all right, son?" Still holds up better than ever.
Yeah, that thing's a classic. All right, Joel, you're up first. You ready?
Let's do it. Let's go.
All right. Which outfielder made an over-the-shoulder catch in the 1954 World Series known simply as...
Oh, so we're doing it like that. Oh, Joel's man. Not even going to get to the end.
Yeah,
of
that's
the
what's up.
Question.
Final answer, yeah.
I like it. That's like, you see that guy in the summer league who went through the legs on a fast break?
Oh,
man,
yeah.
Man was trying to make the team. I don't even know who it was. I just saw it this morning. Like, that was incredible. It was in traffic. Oh.
Hey, man, Ashley Bamani, it was one of your dudes and one of them Longhorns, man, that underperformed in college.
I was about to say, they still had a basketball team.
Wait till you see that, Bo. It was in traffic. It was completely unnecessary, like Joel cutting me off to answer that question.
Oh, my bad. I'm sorry. My bad. All right. I'll let you go through the Bo.
Nah, you good. You good. Let's see how fast you're on this next one. Which player holds the single game NBA record for 3-point field goals?
Counterintuitive. Hold on. It's one of. I'm just going to give what I think is the wrong answer, but.
What?
No, actually, is it Steph?
You asking or you telling?
Steph Curry.
Close.
Clay Thompson.
Clay Thompson.
I knew. Oh my God. I knew. Oh man.
All right.
Man, I lost one of the easy ones, man.
Yeah. The early ones, hard to give them up. I still think you're going to win, but we'll see. You still have your lifeline. What is the distance between each base on a standard Major League Baseball diamond? This question is rated as medium. I feel like lots of people think this is easy. I don't know. Maybe the person who wrote this question is Black because we don't watch baseball.
I was going to say, man, hold on. two baseball questions? That's not fair, man. That's not fair.
My medium question was how many walks Barry Bonds had that year. He had all the walks, and I was off by one, and I got it wrong. And they throw this softball to you and call it medium.
Softball? What? Okay, let me just say it's got to be, let me just get a lifeline.
75 feet, 90 feet, 30 yards, or 15 yards.
What was the first one again?
I'm a little confused at how these multiple choices were added, but it was 75 feet, 90 feet, 30 yards, or 15 yards.
75 feet.
you really could have gotten this one right. We had two right answers in there. The answer is 90 feet or 30 yards.
Also 30 yards.
Yeah.
90 feet. Wait. I mean, see, I'm really falling apart here. Man, you know what I thought? I was like, well, a basketball court is 94 feet. And I was like, there ain't no way that's this between home plate and first base.
That's one for three.
That was a great start. Okay, Brett Favre threw 508 career touchdowns. How many interceptions did he throw?
Oh, I mean,
you use that lifeline right now, couldn't you?
Yeah, I know. Oh, man. I don't know. 350?
336.
Oh, I would have gotten that wrong, too. I thought 335.
See, man, this is, oh, man. Man. I get my come up. Is everybody about to be happy?
I ain't happy. I ain't got my question. Because you're getting all my questions.
No, I need to get one. I at least got to get one more. I mean, come on. Damn.
Well, I don't know. I'm not too confident. Here we go. Which goalie was the first to shoot and score a goal in an NHL game?
Wow. This is anti-blackness. Two baseball questions and a hockey question? What are y'all doing, man?
What are you saying about me?
Well, I mean, to be fair, none of the whites that we had in this would have had anything for these questions either. Except for the base question. They'd have had something there, I think.
Oh, my God. Man, I don't know.
See, y'all should be like, if you a real lifeline would be, if it's like some brother's partnership, help a brother outline. That should be to help each other out for one question.
I got to think of a goalie. I mean, I don't know, Ed Balfour.
I was thinking the same thing.
Ed Balfour, I don't know, is that one?
Nah. Anybody want to take a shot at this?
Kendrick. Ron Hextall, isn't it? It's Ron Hextall.
Wow. Ron Hextall is
Wow.
Wow. That's impressive.
Wow.
That is impressive.
One of five.
Wow. I was going to say, y'all be like, you ain't coming.
Looking definitely like a double coming agent.
You'd be like, double agent. Like, who you work for? You
like, take coming that off. Need... Take that off. Pull it from the bottom. Snatch that off. Thank you.
Man, I was really shooting like Ben Simmons, man.
Same city, though. Flyers.
Oh, just pile it on.
That's not fair. That's not fair.
Remember when you got the first question? You answered it before I could finish?
Well, you know what they say, pride comes before the fall. I understand. It's okay. But hey, look, I got to get his first. It ain't over.
I got to answer two questions.
Here we go. Which shape is visible inside the letter D of the primary logo used for Duke University Athletics?
Question is that?
Wow, that's an easy question.
It's the blue devil. It's a devil, isn't it?
It's a shape.
The answer is
white
diamond.
It's a diamond. That is not an easy question. That is a completely culturally biased question. I don't know.
How are we expecting to know
what you're Rod Hextall talking about that question is culturally biased.
Look at the Duke logo. It's a diamond. All right, see? You can win right now.
How you feeling? Confident?
I feel pretty good about that. I mean, if that's the first one, I mean.
All right. Which player had a single season batting average above 400 in 1941, the last time this occurred?
Come on, dog. That's y'all served. Y'all grooved that one here, man. Come on, man.
I'm sorry. It's 406, Ted Williams.
Yes, sir.
Bro.
All right, we're tied up.
Hold on, man.
I have nothing to do with the question.
Come on, man. I got a Boston baseball question. I didn't get a question about the Rockets. You know. All right, whatever, man. Go ahead. That's fine.
I got a question for the Rockets for you.
Okay.
Yes, kick Derek Cease thing in game four of the NBA Finals in 1986.
I don't see how. I don't feel like he would say that about Ralph Sampson to his face.
I don't know. He hates Ralph Sampson in a way that you can't possibly understand. He hates Ralph Sampson so much and has no fear that Ralph Sampson would fight back.
Really, he could fight back, but I didn't say Ralph Sampson couldn't whoop my ass. I'm just saying I saw what happened that night.
Jerry Sheidig's a professional athlete. You start a fight. I mean, it's a fair fight as far as I'm concerned.
Jerry Seasting didn't start the fight.
Yeah, whatever.
It's Jerry Seasting. Anyway. I mean, look.
Who became the first player to both throw and catch a touchdown pass in a single Super Bowl game?
Oh. Man,
come on.
It's the Patriots, right? It's Nick Foles, right?
Wow.
For the win. Man,
but wait, two Boston-related questions, though, back-to-back, for real?
That was a medium. Okay, let's see what the hards are hitting for.
Right. I got the first one wrong. That was the hard one. Diamond shape.
That's cool stuff, bro.
How many receiving yards did wide receiver Jerry Rice amass during his 20-year NFL career?
That's a hard question because
these questions to the decimal. We don't even get within 100. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, man. That's
how many yards? Nobody cares. This isn't baseball. We care about numbers in baseball. We don't care about yards. Jerry Rice, I have no idea how many yards he amassed in his career. I just know he was number one. But
I think it's like 18,000.
I was going to say it was close to 20.
I was going to say 19,322. I don't know.
22,895.
Wow.
That's a terrible question. I want to speak to the manager.
He just stunting on you now, Joe.
After you got grooved two Boston questions, by the way. But go ahead. That's fine.
How many times in NBA history has a center led the league in assists?
Center.
I know the answer to this.
I'm going
to
say once. It's Chamberlain, right?
Right.
Bomani?
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, Chamberlain, 1968.
I mean, dog, that was the hard one? I feel like Gabe, I'm not even the one that said anything negative about
you didn't know how many feet was between the bases.
Again, it's culturally biased. I don't know anything about baseball.
Y'all gave me a geometry question.
In my teenage years, the Astros didn't have any black baseball players. It's not fair to ask me to do this.
None?
You know what I'm saying? Well, there was a few years where they didn't have any black players. When I was in my 20s. Is that right?
Well, yeah. That year they went to the World Series, and it was 24 brown-haired dudes and Willie Taveras in 05.
Do you know who Willie Taveras roomed with, by the way?
Mm-mm.
Luke Scott. Do y'all remember Luke Scott?
The Luke Scott, sure.
Really?
Uh-huh. They were friends.
Interesting. Were friends. The Astros had, like, Billy Hatcher and Eric Kevin Anthony Bass. And Gerald Young and Kevin
Eric
Bass.
Eric Anthony and in Kevin that Bass. Run. Ooh.
Yeah, in that run. But then after that, they were like, yo, these boys ain't selling no tickets.
Well, I mean, they had to fill out the damn Astros.
That is a very good question. If you said, like, if you made a list, greatest black player of every team, who's the worst player? Might be on the Astros. Joe Morgan.
Joe Morgan.
Code 45.
And the late, great James Rodney Richard.
And JR.
Jimmy Wynn.
Mm-hmm. Enos Cabell?
Well, I'm thinking Enos Cabell, brother, too. I'm thinking in prime. J.R. Richard would be the best.
Especially for, like, the old, for, like, stalwart franchises, for lack of a better term. Like, let's not throw the Rays in here. Let's not throw the new ones. The Marlins had a bunch of black dudes that one year.
Well, it's got to be Sheffield.
Fred McGriff.
Right, yeah, he was there for a couple of years.
Right, damn, that's interesting.
Who wins that for the Red Sox?
For this conversation.
Jim Rice, right? If we take the Dominicans out.
Still Jim Rice. Yeah. Maybe the Red Sox might be, although Jim Rice is in the Hall of Fame.
Yes, eventually.
No, he's in there.
You know, that's what I mean. It just took a while.
I told you, I saw Jim Rice when I was working on my first book, right? And I had to go talk to Jim Rice. That right through you. I mean, right through you. I mean, it was a Sunday morning. Anybody been on a baseball field, Sunday morning baseball, it's the chillest day ever because it's a getaway day. Everybody's cool. Good morning, good morning, good morning, right? It's just me and Jim Rice walking through the tunnel, Fenway Park. He looked right through you. I mean, brother to brother, too. Look, walk right through you. I mean, basketball, it don't matter because, you know, it's everywhere. But baseball, brother's acknowledged in baseball. Right? Then he gets into the Hall of Fame. He's like, hey, Howard, good morning. Hey, I'm like, oh, that's what it was.
I mean, man, we don't know what that man went through, man. You know what I'm saying? Hey. How they were treating him.
But I say, because I'm sure Jim Rice had a bunch of naysayers. And while we're here and before we go, Joel, do you have anything to say to the naysayers? Because I don't know if you know, but I kind of laid down a challenge
I heard you. And I appreciate it. It was supposed to be North Side versus South Side. And I'm sorry I disappointed the handful of fans I have. Which
this
probably
was supposed
includes,
to be an all Houston.
You know, it was supposed to be an all Houston thing. I didn't hope, you know, much like Houston professional teams, I let us down before we got to the championship game.
So you already taped, though?
No, yeah. I mean, it's me and you, baby.
Yeah.
God damn. Here we go.
Well, I mean, y'all feel like
Celtics Rockets one more time.
Man, see, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't have a problem losing to Howard, you know what I'm saying? Because some of the stereotypes, they don't apply in this situation. And Howard's a great dude, you know what I'm saying? I looked up to him, you know what I'm saying? So that's fine, but. You know, I just kind of feel like Gabe was cheating. You know what I'm saying? I mean, again, two Boston-related questions. I mean, come on, man. Somebody say something about that.
I'll tell you what it's like in the finals after it's finished. I might even give you a sneak preview and let you know who the winner is. Like, I know you want to know what it's like.
I'm not even listening to that. When I was in the shower
this morning, I was thinking, what will they say if Bomani Jones wins his own tournament?
It's so funny. We had just been thinking about what they would say if I lose it. Here you go, throwing in allegations of corruption.
Tim Donaghy coming up with the questions here. So, I mean,
he is making a comeback since he's in the Malice of the Palace with no,
I'll go say.
With no mention. Just Tim Donaghy, referee. What?
I was kind of like, yeah, like, hey, somebody mentioned why he's here for a reason. What? You know what I'm saying? Like, somebody to explain who that dude
I was
is.
Just, I mean, he was a referee here in the game, wasn't he?
I had a parlay on Ron Artest and Steven Jackson. You know?
Man.
I couldn't believe that.
Yeah, he just floating. Just flow.
How about a little tiny asterisk or something for those in the know?
I mean, seriously.
Yeah, that's just been Tim Donaghy and underneath hashtag IYKYK.
Right.
You know. Former disgraced NBA ref.
Exactly.
Yes. Anyway. But yo, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing 3 times a week. Next week, me and Howard Bryan for the Trivia Championship. Joel Anderson, listening just like the rest of y'all.
I put this shirt on for no damn reason.
Yeah, it's the best, best you looked all week, baby. Best you looked all week.
This shirt's never coming on again.
Yeah, that's right. Gabe Bassett and Dave Presley handle everything behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Damn, Joel.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.